Morning, everybody. Welcome to Friends Church. Happy long weekend. I guess I lied and told you guys it was going to snow today, so you should come in, right? That's beautiful. Today, the topic is kind of near and dear to my heart. So I want to kind of start by talking a bit about why this series is something that I wanted to do. Well, you'll hear more about that. That was about 20 years ago now. Woke up one morning early before my alarm, and my rule with myself was if I wake up before my alarm, I'd go to church. So I was like, ah, crap, I woke up before my alarm. So I jumped in my old crappy car and drove over to my brother's church. I was in Edmonton at the time. And lo and behold, I met this amazing girl. And we fell fast in love. A year later, we were married. And in the year that we dated, we never actually even lived in the same city. I lived in Regina, I was going to school. She lived here in Calgary, going to school. And so the whole time was, you know, weekends and the odd week we could take on reading break and phone calls. And it was all very honeymoon, you know, all the time. Until we got married. And pardon my French, but the shit hit the fan. It wasn't easy for us. It was incredibly hard. And we just kept fighting and fighting for it because we're like, no, we committed to this thing. We got to do this thing. And something I didn't realize because I never spent a whole lot of time with her is there was something more going on for her. Now, I reached out and asked if I could share the story. And she said, yeah, she cares about helping people. So I remember there was kind of two parts to her. There's the part that I knew and I loved, and then there's another part. And at the time, I thought she was angry. She was angry at me or angry at something. And she was an artist going to ACAD. And I don't know if you guys know anything about ACAD. You think it's an art school, so it's all like people painting and having fun. No. It's all people painting and then getting all of their work ripped apart in public every week. It's brutal. And I thought, well, you know, if you guys, we did this message, and at the end, we stopped and said, okay, everyone tell me all the crappy stuff I just said, and how I said it poorly, and how I could have said it better. That's what her life was on a regular basis. And so I just attributed kind of this other side of her to that. She's high stress, crazy environment, working all-nighters. You know, you work 3 weeks on something, and then someone just tells you it's a piece of crap, and why did you even bother putting the paint on a piece of, like, it's brutal. But what I learned after a time is it wasn't that she was mad. She was profoundly sad. She was depressed. And I didn't even know what that meant. I'd never experienced it. I didn't know what it looked like. I didn't know what to do with it. Most of the times, I'm pretty sure if I would look back now and see the moments of what I did, I probably made it worse each and every time. Because I had no clue. I didn't understand why sometimes she'd be this warm, loving wife, and then all of a sudden she'd just kind of be gone and not there. I remember the day it escalated. We were actually in Canmore at a couple's workshop, and I was on staff at the church, and so I was working. And she decided to come along with me and spend the weekend. I remember coming back to the hotel room. I still remember, she was wearing this blue nightgown. And she looked at me, she's like, I have to go home. I was like, oh, okay, like, yeah, we'll go home tomorrow because, you know, I have to work tomorrow. But, yeah, we'll go home tomorrow. She's like, no, I have to go home now. I was like, I'm working. Like, she's like, no, I need to go home now. We got her a ride home, and I got home a couple days later, and it took me probably another year to realize what started off was depression, and anxiety and depression are often close friends, and now it escalated to panic disorder. That got worse and worse and worse. Moments where she couldn't leave the house. In fact, by the end, she was on the agoraphobia side of things, which means she wouldn't go out of the house. She was too scared that a panic attack would just take her in the middle of public, something going on in public, and just take her out. She was done school by this time. She was working on her own. She had her own business, so she could work from home. Through the whole time, I didn't get it. Not because I didn't want to get it, not because I wasn't caring. I loved my wife, but I had no clue what was going on for her. I had no clue how to help. I basically just took off to the mountains and went climbing and biking and scrambling, and she was home alone. I think as a society, we have a profound chance to love people with mental illness in a more skillful way than we ever have. I was never taught how to love someone with a mental illness. I had no clue what to do. And as somebody who doesn't struggle with mental illness, with somebody who I love deeply, I didn't know what to do. Statistics say that every one of us will touch somebody with a mental illness in our lives. And I'm betting if I talk to the crowd now, and I know a lot of your stories, the people with mental illness in your lives are the closest people in your lives. Your kids, your parents, partners and spouses, siblings, friends, maybe even your bosses to people, or colleagues to people, or work with people, or go to school with people. The ability to do something good in this world through this relationship, I think, is profound. And I understand that this is my story, and so there's a passion here for me, but if 4 to 5 of us are mentally healthy, that means we have so much ability to love people with a mental illness in a more skillful way than we have been. I talk to people with mental illness all the time, and they'll tell me stories about how someone said this thing that was just so hurtful to them. Or somebody says, you know, just buck up, camper. Just pull yourself through, like, you know, bootstraps kind of message. And people just hurt deeply by, and again, I don't think people are being ignorant. They just don't know. So today I want to talk to the people in the crowd who love people with a mental illness. I want to see if there's a way that we can think of mental illness in a new way, in a way that, in a conceptualization that will help us be more loving, be more skillful. Friend, church is about making this world better, loving our neighbor, working with our spirituality in the world that changes things for the better. And I think this is a topic that has so much potential for good. So today I'm going to talk to people like me. I'm sure you're all more skillful than I was. Was, am. Because we have so much potential here. Okay? Now I want to talk a little bit about how we work. You know, before I do, let me just ask you this. A couple months ago, I was talking with one of our team members about this series, and I was trying to figure out how I was going to talk about this. And I was like, anything I say is going to be wrong to somebody. I'm going to offend somebody. I'm going to put my foot in my mouth. I'm going to do something stupid. Let's just cancel this series. I'm going to teach about rainbows and cupcakes and unicorns. It's going to be awesome. But you know what? It took me a while. I had a week where I was like, screw it, I'm not doing this. It took me a while to realize, no, we got to talk about this. So here's what I want to ask of you guys today. Just give me a little grace. This is the first time I've done this. I'm probably going to say things a little bit off, or I'm not going to say quite right, or the metaphor I use isn't the one that fits for you, or I can miss something. Just, this is our first attempt to try and have this conversation, to try and make this world a bit more loving. Is that okay? So before you send me an email that's like, screw you, Clausen, be like, well, he's not very good at this. So you guys knew I used to run a lot. And when I say a lot, like a lot. And the last race I did was the Sinister 7. It's a 100-mile running race. And it took me 28 hours to finish it. And, yeah. I remember being It's one of those things, like, why would people ask me, like, why do you do that? Are you stupid? Or, like, is there a mental illness we need to talk about? Like, just stop running. And they always, and then, you know, kind of the deeper question is, how do you run that long? Like, seriously, how do you run for 28 hours straight? And when you say run, like, air quote that, like, shuffle, stumble, like, you know, whatever you do. And I say this, just don't stop. It's really the answer. It's not a training answer, although training is obviously important. You want to be able to walk the next week. It's not a nutrition answer, again, very important answer. It's not even a gear answer, although that, you know, the chafing is pretty epic. It's actually a willpower issue. To run these long races was my attempt to try and figure out how much willpower I have. I remember being on transition 4. It was probably, my brain, 18 hours in, give or take, whatever. I am dumb as a post. I can hardly remember my name. This lady comes to me and says, do you like some soup? And I'm trying to think, what does that word soup mean? And, you know, my team is saying, hey, do you want this? Do you want this? I'm going, And at the end, I refilled my bag. And it was this moment where it's like, okay, how much willpower do you have? I kind of pushed myself out of this chair and started stumbling down the road. About half an hour later, the drugs kicked in, started shuffling. So here's the thing that I want to talk to, or I'm telling you this. I think our society has been driven for years by willpower. How did you get through school? Willpower. Start your own business. Willpower. Young kids, holy crap, willpower, right? There's some parents over here that are like, this is the ultramarathon of ultramarathons. How do you do anything in this world? You do it through willpower. If I just don't stop, if I just keep pushing ahead, I will solve this. I will make this. I will get through this. I will handle this. But what do you do when willpower is not enough? What do you do as somebody who spent their whole life with just amazing amounts of willpower and suddenly the willpower doesn't work? It's not that I don't have enough. It's that willpower is the wrong thing. Today, I don't want to talk about all mental illness because that's just overwhelming. I want to talk about the subset of mental illnesses that are resistant to willpower. Not necessarily the whole thing, but there will be a time in these illnesses where willpower is not enough. Somebody who has chronic depression, at some point when it hits them hard, there's no amount of willpower that will help them get back to healthy. As somebody who's succeeded in life through willpower, this makes no sense to me. And probably, if you've never struggled with mental illness, you understand it's like, well, no, just buck up. Just do what you need to do. Just get out of bed. Just stop thinking that way. Why are you scared of something? It's fine. Just get your brain in the right place. You see the answer? It's a willpower answer. It's a buck up camper. And to somebody who's in the midst of this, whatever the illness is, it can be, there's tons of them, whatever the illness is, willpower is not going to do anything in those moments. It's kind of, they've gone over the tipping point and willpower is not even in the story anymore. What do you do? How do you love? How do you get your brain from, I can run ultra marathons, but everything that I know and everything I got over here doesn't help here. Doesn't help my wife, who has an incredible amount of willpower. She would pull all-nighters like one after the other. The willpower on that girl is through the roof. But when it hit her, it wasn't what worked. How do we, as those who love people with mental illness, who have this mindset that says willpower is how you solve problems in this world, deal with problems that willpower doesn't touch? And what blew my mind is I was reading a story in the Bible that just changed everything for me. It's a story about Jesus, and there's a dad and his son who comes to Jesus, and Jesus says, "Why are you here?" And the father says, "Something's trying to kill my son." That's pretty intense, huh? Jesus says, "Well, you know, tell me about it." He says, "Well, he's fine, and he's fine, and he's fine." And then all of a sudden, something grabs him and throws him into the fire and tries to burn him to death. Or throws him into the water and tries to drown him. But here's the thing. There's only the dad and the son there. The thing that the father says is trying to kill my son isn't another person. In his mind, there's something, there's a force, there's something that's causing his son to do things that he would never do. I talked with someone in preparation for this message, young mom of two young kids. Her husband was working overseas. And she said, "I remember the day when I couldn't stop crying. I couldn't." She's got two young kids. Everything in her is saying, keep your shit together. These kids need you. The husband's not even there. And she can't stop it. It's getting worse and worse. Who's going to take care of my kids? Everything in her says, I want to be here and be a mom to my kids, and yet there's something taking me out and I can't stop it. She calls her husband, says, If you think I'm going crazy, you're right, I am, and I can't stop it. Talked with another person. For them, part of their mental illness is they cut themselves. Not to kill themselves, but they cut themselves. When they're in the midst of whatever's going on, it's like they can put gashes in their stomachs that take dozens of stitches to put back together. She said, you know what? When I'm healthy, I tried to cut myself one time. I could hardly draw blood. It hurt. But when it's got me, I can cut chunks out of myself. I want to cut chunks out of myself. In the biblical story, the father who looks at his son who he loves to death and goes, it's like he's trying to kill himself. But when he's healthy, he doesn't want to die. And the only way the father can conceive of it is something that's consistent to his tradition, but we've lost. We got rid of because it's too woo-woo. The father says, a demon's got my son, and he's trying to kill him. I don't know about you, but as soon as someone says the word demon, I'm like, huh? And the skeptic inside of me is like, whoa, Clausen, like, whoa. But look at the definition. An entity or force that has the power to influence humans, often tied to mental illness. Is that not what it seems like to the people we love when they're trying to hurt themselves? Is that not what it seems like to a father who looks at his son and says, of all the things you could be doing, you're throwing yourself into a fire to burn yourself to death? This makes no sense. The only explanation I have is a demon's causing this. Now today, you don't need to believe in demons. Whether supernatural things exist is not part of this conversation at all. I don't even want to go there. I want to think of this conceptually, though. How does it change when you see somebody you love in the grips of their mental illness, doing something that when they're healthy, there's no way they want to do it? A mother who can't be there for her kids. Everything in her is saying, you need to be there for your kids. And she can't. And from someone looking at the outside, we can say, oh, she's just letting herself wallow. Or we can say, oh, come on, buck up. You're a mom now. You can't just give into that stuff. But those are all willpower answers, aren't they? What if we conceive of mental illness as an entity outside of the people we love, causing them to do things that they would never want to do when they're healthy? Instead of a father saying to his son, "What the hell are you doing? Get out of the fire." He says, "Wow, how's the demon doing today? Talking pretty loud, yeah?" And again, I'm not saying this literally. I'm saying this conceptually. For somebody who sits outside of mental illness, for whom willpower has always been the solution to problems in life, what if we look at the people we love who are struggling, who are doing things that in their healthiest moments they would never do? And instead of saying, "You aren't doing enough, you aren't skillful enough, you haven't done enough, you just need to buck up," what if we conceive of something outside of them? Conceive of their illness almost as outside of them. The technical term is externalization. You take the illness and you put it outside the person, and then you both work together to battle the illness, not the person. Can you see how it shifts? As I said, my ex-wife had willpower beyond what I have. If she would ever get into running, she'd crush it. She can work more hours. She can work longer hours. She can work more all-nighters than I ever could. And when I looked at her and said, "Why are you pulling away right now? Why are you distant? Why are you canceling our plans?" I'm looking at her and saying the problem is you. But if I take Jesus' story and conceptualize it differently, not "why are you?" What's the demon saying today? What things is it telling you to be scared of? You see how it shifts? It's no longer me against her. It's me and her against the demon. What do you need from me today? How can I help? How do I love? Whenever we do this, whenever we create a metaphor or conceptualization, just know it's not perfect. Probably some of you are thinking in your head, yeah, but, and you're right. All the buts, you're right. There's a million problems with this. There's a million problems with externalization. But for me, it starts to look at mental illness in a new way. It starts to shift how my heart approaches the people I love. It's no longer, "Why can't you?" It's no longer a willpower question in my mind. Now it's going, "What's going on for you? What's that thing outside of you trying to get you to do that you don't even want to do?" Say those things. Cut yourself in the way it does. Pull away. Blow up a job opportunity. You name it. We've seen it in the people we love, right? All the different ways that mental illness takes them out of the game. And that's why I wanted to share this today. Because if this can help you even a little bit, not even as much as it's helped me, because it's been profound for me, but if this can help you just a little bit, just to see the people you love in a new way, in a different way, in a more open-hearted way, I think the love and the connection and the good in this world is going to increase. I spent some time talking to people who love people with a mental illness. I want to talk a little about people with mental illness. I ended my story of my ex-wife with basically, she was almost not leaving the home. She would stay for days at a time. She wouldn't leave. Fast forward, we're in Montana. That's probably 2 or 3 years later. We're in Montana at some random town whose name I don't know. At about 2 in the afternoon, at some random legion that I don't know where it exists, and we're sleeping on the sidewalk. You're all wondering, what the heck are you guys doing sleeping on the sidewalk? We're on a motorcycle trip from Calgary to Mexico on back roads using only maps. Now, let me just tell you something here. Agoraphobic people do not ride motorcycles from here to Mexico with just a map. Here's my wife, full motocross or motorcycle gear, her helmet. Her helmet's laying on a rock because it's more comfortable. And she's got her arms crossed and she's sleeping in the middle of the day in the middle of a town and doesn't seem to care. People with panic disorders do not sleep in random towns like that. There's a moment where Olsen, she said, I can't live this way anymore. And she started to get help. She worked her ass off. In the end, she went from being almost agoraphobic to motorcycling across the country. Every day is unknown. Every moment's unknown. All things that people with panic disorder do not do well with. Sleeping on sidewalks in the middle of towns. I don't know what your mental illness is. I don't know if it's public or if you've tried to hide it. I don't know where it sits for you. But I'm telling you, the skill or the services we have now are incredible. To get help, to get support, to make it easier, to understand. I don't know what you need, but you don't need to live with this thing hidden, untreated. There's ways to be that are better than that. You can live a full life. The final thing that I want to say is this, and this I think is really important. For people with mental illness, when I started talking about this week, you could tell in their mind or their body language that they were just like kind of crumbling as we're going. Yeah, it's hard to love us. It's challenging. You could tell they were just like, why do people even love us? I want to throw something positive on the mix. If you have worked your whole life, and I have a friend, incredibly successful guy, one day he walked into his job and they said, you're done. Security's going to escort you out. He's got as much willpower as I got, and nothing worked in that moment. Do you know who is the most perfect person for him to be around in those moments? Somebody who gets when willpower's not enough. People with a mental illness have a superpower. You guys pay an incredible price for it, and I don't wish that on anyone, but I'm telling you, you guys have a superpower. You have empathy at a level that I don't have. You have empathy at a level that people like me do not have. We've never had something take us over. We've never had to fight the demon. We don't understand that. And you guys have, that does something to you that shifts you in a way that makes you better people in this world than I am often. I know the price is ridiculous. And I know you wouldn't want this. You know, if you had to pay the price to get that, you're like, screw that, Clausen. But I'm telling you, you make incredible people to be in relationship with. Your hearts have a softness to them and an awareness to them that we don't have. You make incredible people to be in relationship with. So let me end. For people like me who love people with a mental illness, I think I can probably say for most of us, we've been unbelievably skillless. At best, skillless. Most of the time, ignorant. Sometimes just plain mean. Today, we have the ability to be different. To reach out to our parents who struggle, our kids who struggle, our partners and spouses who struggle, our siblings, our friends, our colleagues, our neighbors. We have the chance to do it differently, to love better, to love more skillfully. I don't know if this conceptualization will blow your mind like it did mine, but I'm telling you, it still blows my mind. I still catch myself going, oh, just willpower. Oh, just willpower. So sit with this. Next time you're with the person you love who struggles, sit with it and go, okay, wait, am I giving them the willpower answer? Or am I conceptualizing this as a demon? So I was saying to my ex-wife, like, come on, we locked the door already. You saw me do it. To going, oh, babe, I'm so sorry. We have the chance to change the world. We have the chance to make the world better for so many people in our lives. And that's what Friend Church is all about. So I want to encourage you, reach out to the people you love that have mental illness. Talk to them. Ask them about this. Ask them if this would help them. Connect in with them. If it's triggering you, ask yourself why. If you want to talk more about it, I can throw my email up on. Send me a note. Send me your stories. Send me your questions. Send me whatever you want. Let's keep the conversation going because we can make the world a little bit better in this way. That I guarantee you. Next week, I'm going to bring three brave souls who struggle. And they're going to tell you their stories. Because their stories are way more powerful than me talking about them. You don't want to miss that one. Have a great week, everyone. We'll see you next week.